It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Second, as I was discussing 2 days ago, you can expect robust discussion, and my hope is laws passed that I will sign addressing health care in this state. There is an array of health care issues that we face as a state in general, but there are an array of health care issues that relate to those who commit gun crimes in particular. Those need to be addressed, whether it be the health care issues that I talked publicly here with the mayor about 2 days ago, and that would affect the community in general, or whether it be laws that address the challenges that are now surfacing that this killer had in his life that lead to someone doing what he did. And then there will be all other kinds of issues. But there will be committees formed. There will be meetings held. There will be proposals that will be derived, many of which will lead to laws that will be passed in the state of Texas. Because let me make one thing perfectly clear. The status quo is unacceptable. This crime is unacceptable. We're not going to be here and talking about it and do nothing about it. We will be looking for the best laws that we can get passed to make our communities and schools safer. Go ahead. Let's be clear about a couple of things that show that these background checks, if everyone wants to seize upon a particular strategy and just assume, well, that's the golden strategy right there. Look at what happened in the Santa Fe shooting. A background check had no relevancy whatsoever because the killer took the gun from his parent. Look at what happened in the shooting in Sutherland Springs. There was a background check that was done. It was done in a flawed way that allowed the killer to get a gun. And so anyone who suggests, well, maybe we should focus on background checks as opposed to mental health, I suggest to you is mistaken. If there's anybody here who thinks we have perfect health care in this country, in this world, they're wrong. If there's anybody who thinks that we can't do more to address mental health care, they're wrong. They can. We can. And we're going to. Go ahead. Go ahead. Yes. What I've been told about that is several things. One is that this is an ongoing investigation and that there have been obviously new facts and information surfaced, revealed as a result of that investigation that are different today than they were 2 days ago. Second, there will be ongoing investigations that detail exactly who knew what when, who was in charge of what strategy, why was that particular strategy employed, why were other strategies not employed. Bottom line would be, why did they not choose the strategy that would have been best to get in there and to eliminate the killer and to rescue the children? I can't hear you. I can't hear you.
Go ahead. Yes, this is me, Antonio.
Antonio, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Okay.
Good.
Just in a very respectful way, Governor, would you consider, this is a kid, 18 years old, would you consider at least a man, an 18 years old, being able to buy and ARP2. That's all I'm asking.
So it's my understanding that ever since Texas has been a state, an 18-year-old has had the ability to buy a long gun, a rifle. Right. And since that time, it seems like it's only been in the past decade or two that we've had school shootings. So for a century and a half, 18-year-olds could buy rifles. And we didn't have school shootings, but we do now. Maybe we're focusing our attention on the wrong thing, and we're focusing it on...
Senator Roman, I'm not doing a political... You know, my colleagues are asking for a special session. You're getting a letter tomorrow. In the caucus of the Senate Democratic Caucus, we've asked for gun control changes. I'm asking you now to bring this back in 3 weeks. I apologize for interrupting this press conference about the need of this community. I've been here for 3 days with all of these legislators. This kind of judge has worked his ass off. The mayor, these council people, I don't know how to express the loss of the family that I've talked to. And I know you need to have to do something, man. My own colleagues are telling me, calling me, telling me, an 18-year-old trip having to have a kind of judge. This is enough.
Next question. I can't hear you. Speak up.
On that earlier question about the Uvalde Consolidated School District that came in Arizona, are you specifically investigating in what is the status of the employment and the name screwed down under investigation?
Sure. Can I was unable to hear the first part of your question. Would you restate it?
On the school's police check, Kate Aragon, the gentleman who stopped police going in earlier, is he specifically under investigation? And what is the status of his employment? Has he been stood down pending investigation? What is the situation?
Okay. So every act by every official involved in this entire process is under the investigation conducted both by the Texas Rangers and by the FBI. Every act of all of those officials will be known and identified and explained to the public. But I cannot overemphasize enough, we need to get that information to the families of all these victims who deserve to know the most. As far as his employment status is concerned, that's something that is beyond my control and I have no knowledge about.
Last question.
Go for it. Sure.
Yeah, as the governor said, I'm not in law enforcement. I have not. I'm the mayor of the city, but and once we know what took place, what went down, we'll get to the bottom of it and see. I've been just as confused as you are, because as the governor was, I got the same information that the governor got until yesterday afternoon. I was blown away, and again this morning, other information. So I don't have an answer for you yet, but I can tell you if we need to make changes in that, we will.
You've just been listening to a press conference by Governor Greg Abbott of Texas, who talked about being livid at the fact that he says he was misled by the officers and about the officers' response to the Uvalde shooting. And we heard him talk about his investigation by the Texas Rangers and the FBI. As soon as that information is gotten, they will give the information to the families about the result of that investigation. He also talked about what strategies, what best practices have to be employed, what mistakes, if any, were made here. He was very strong in his opinion that they should have eliminated the killer and rescued the children. And in response to a question about 18-year-olds being allowed to get a long gun or a rifle, the governor was very clear that in Texas, for the last century and a half, 18-year-olds have been able to get long guns, and it's only in the last decade or so that we've been hearing about school shootings. So I guess that, Greg, I'll start with you. We've got a livid governor, justifiably livid, as I think everyone at this table is tonight, with the fact that we have been misled as to what the facts were.
Well, I think the important thing he said was, and it's something that I said yesterday, is we only get to the scene of the story after it happens, and we should address every variable, every step that gets you to that crime, whether it is mental illness, schools, family, red flags. The fact that he said that this is a new thing in a decade and a half, that kind of points you in the direction of where the answers are. Why are these things happening more and more in this kind of society? Is it something that has to do with not simply the availability of guns, because they have been available, social media, it's a decline in education, it's a breakdown of the family. But these are a lot of things that we don't want to talk about, because we've avoided these problems for so long. We've avoided these problems for 50 years. I think you can say, you know, the governor is livid, and you could say, well, maybe the police were incompetent, or they were afraid, or they were adherent to a doctrine that prevented improvising. But that is not my place. That's his place. And that is the place for the investigators to let them investigate fully to tell the story, which is necessary. You need the scrutiny, because there's going to be a next time. And the information you glean from this time will help you in the next time. That's why it's important. And it isn't Monday morning quarterbacking for investigators or law enforcement or family members, survivors, to question these variables. That is entirely their right. However, I feel like as a media, we have to be very careful, because we Monday morning quarterback 5 days a week. And we assume, and it's amazing to me how we all become experts on every, it's amazing. And I didn't go to school for any of this, but somehow I can have an opinion. So I think be humble, let them do the job, let them talk about what the police did or didn't do, and try to keep your, again, let the story grow, let the facts pile up.
You know, Joey, the governor was talking about, and the state head of the Department of Public Safety came out and said that the school director, I think his name was McGraw, made a mistake, and that they, instead of dealing with this guy, Ramos, as an active shooter, they dealt with him as a barricaded shooter. Now, you've got adherence to the chain of command. You're a military guy. You've got parents outside screaming, yelling, being handcuffed, according to some, being thrown to the ground, according to others, or listening to shots periodically through this. Do you always listen to chain of command in a situation where your gut is telling you that there is an active shooter? I'm hearing an active shooter in there.
Well, number one, I'm a military guy, not a police guy. Those two different things.
Well, chain of command is chain of command.
Fair. My reason for pointing that out is not to assume any credibility I don't have on the topic.
Right.
So Monday morning quarterbacking or voicing the fact that expectations were not met, those are two very different things. The governor's the chief executive in that state over their law enforcement. It's his job to say, these are the protocols we have. Active shooter is you run to the gun. You go to the gun and you take it out. All right. A hostage situation is very much different. I text Pete Hegseth 48 hours ago and said, man, this looks a lot like they handled it like a hostage situation. That doesn't make sense.
They did.
But I don't know why that is. I don't know what. I was not in that room. I was not in the hallway. I was not in that school. I can't tell you why that is.
We all know that. But what we know now is that children are calling.
What we know now or what people are saying on television.
No, what we know now, today,
what we know now
is that at 11:35, officers go in. They are being shot at. Okay, at 11:35. At 12:16, there's a 911 call, Shannon, and one of the kids says eight or nine of us are alive. And at 12:21, there are three shots that are ringing out. They've got an active shooter. Why does it go from 12:21 to 12:50 for them to figure out there's an active shooter?
It's a hell of a question. I'd like that answer, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and there were questions asked of these officials. Were the 911 calls being relayed to the commander on the scene? Did they know that? Because if you're treating this as a barricade situation where maybe there are no children alive in that room, it's just the shooter himself, you're going to handle that differently. But when you have repeated calls, and I feel like they're going to release those 911 calls, and it's going to be really hard to listen to them.
Absolutely.
When children are begging, please send the police, and they're in there for 30, 40, 50 minutes, You have no idea what it was like for those kids in there. And we are all furious and we are all heartbroken. And we always want quick answers because as human beings, we want to try to make sense of this and we cannot make sense of this. But it does take time to get there. And Greg, as you touched on, we cannot pretend like our society has not broken down at the family level, at the community level, at the church level, that we have done things that have actively ripped those institutions apart and then wonder why when there is a young man who is bullied, who is made fun of, his family is estranged and a complete mess, that he devolves further and further into these online communities where people find toxic relationships and ideologies that they want a sense of self-esteem and a sense of being. And all those places they could have found it before are being ripped away. We cannot act like not examining that and passing a bunch of laws is going to make these young men better. And Charles Krauthammer had a fantastic piece in 2012 that he wrote after the Sandy Hook shooting. I wish he was still with us to make sense of this, if he could. And it talks about a culture of violence and how we have just broken things down. And we cannot pretend those things don't matter.
Okay, let's take a listen to the Texas Department of Public Safety director and what he said earlier. I'll get back to you, Harold.
Perfect.
For the benefit of hindsight, where I'm sitting now, of course it was not the right decision. It was the wrong decision, period. There's no excuse for that. But again, I wasn't there, but I'm just telling you, from what we know, we believe there should have been an entry at that as soon as you can.
The chief of police of Consolidated Independent School District, he was convinced. And again, I want to go back and say, you know, he was convinced at the time that there was no more threat to the children and that the subject was barricaded and that they had time to organize with the proper equipment.
Texas embraces and teaches,
okay, the active shooter doctrine. The active duty shot doctrine, as long as there's kids, as long as there's someone's firing, you go to the gun, you find them, you neutralize them, period.
The active shooter doctrine, Harold.
So first off, I want to give Governor Abbott a lot of credit. We're in a different party. But for him to stand before the press and answer those questions, real leadership is accountable and shares credit when things go right. And when they go wrong, you're accountable. And I give him credit for that. Two, when he talks about the responses, I think he's talking about two responses. The response of the officers on the ground, which obviously was a devastating disaster, a fatal disaster. And then, two, what I think he was equally livid at, I heard in his voice and heard in his words, was that he was lied to by law enforcement afterwards. So I understand, and we can all accept at a painful way how mistakes can be made. And I listened to that Mr. McCraw there say that this officer commander foolishly, wrongly thought that this was a barricade situation. But once you leave there, one thing the chain of command is consistent with, if you lie to your superiors, if you mislead your superiors, everyone that lied to the governor and the police chief and the mayor should be fired immediately, number one. Number two, this is a public safety conversation that has to happen. And we always try to say we want to take politics out of things. You can't take politics out of things. We are all political beings, and we have to just accept that there's a modicum of that in the conversation. So we got to talk about schools and what has to happen. You touched on it yesterday, Judge. There are 8 schools in that district, we learned, and there are 4 security resource officers. That needs to change. The question around minors and mental illness and whether or not, you know, we've had mental illness in our society forever. We've had evil since the introduction of mankind. Australia has evil, but they haven't had a mass shooting since 1996. Do we look at what other countries are doing? I think we have to put all of that on the table. But I was most impressed with this press conference because the governor and the mayor, this has all been in 2 or 3 days here. In 2 days, they have they've let facts guide this conversation. And the response on the scene, a disaster, a fatal disaster. And what I'm equally, if not in a weird way, more disturbed by is that it seems like law enforcement then lied to the governor and lied to the police deputy, the Texas Department of Public Safety leader, and lied to the mayor. And that is not only fireable. I've got another place in my mind where those people are reserved for as well.
Well, all right, Joey, I'm going to go back to you now. With respect to the hardening of the schools, we now know that the teacher opened the door at 11:27. At 11:28, there's a crash, and she runs in to make a 911 call at 11:30, and then she doesn't go back and close the door. And then what is crazy about it, Joey, is that he then jumps a fence with a long gun, they say an AR-15, and a bag of ammo, and he shoots at the school before he even gets into the school. They call school resource officer. He drives by, maybe didn't see the guy, but then doesn't go back to the school.
No, I think the last thing I heard, and that's my biggest problem with even being on live TV talking about this, is whatever we say and talk about right now, something's probably going to change it tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's bothering me so much about this, is why can't they get their ducks in a row? And it's probably because a lot of people are sitting there looking at the severity of this massacre, probably with their initial instinct trying to cover their own tail.
That's exactly right.
And probably changing the narrative of what happened in their own minds to the point they believe it. And that's part of the problem with this resource officer. Listen, when I went to high school, and he may be a fantastic police officer now, but we called him Barney Fife because that was the presence he had.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and why? Because you put him somewhere that you don't think matters because you're out there catching drug dealers and murderers on the streets, and the school's a safe place. Well, that's changed. That's not the posture we need anymore. I don't know anything about the school resource officer there. I believe there were four officers for a district of eight schools. I do know that they usually put priority on high schools rather than elementary schools. These are all things that have to change, but they're all things that should have changed years ago.
Right.
And you're talking about a rural area. We had, I believe it was a Texas state senator on Fox and Friends this morning talking about frustration, or it might have been the mayor. I believe it was the mayor talking about frustration. If they need certain types of resources, say guidance counselors or mental health counselors for students, they have to go to San Antonio. They have to go to places 20, 30, 50 miles away. These are all things that have to be addressed. And just back to the security of the school, from my understanding, it was an awards day. Mm-hmm. And that's why security was lax as far as entering and exiting
earlier
the facility.
That morning, right?
Yeah.
And if that's the case, common sense says you bring in more officers. You ask for more physical persons.
Yep. And the crazy part about it, Shannon, is that apparently 2 months before, they had active shooter training in that school district for the lower school, the elementary, middle school and high school.
Yeah, and there was a posting on Facebook at some point that the Uvalde SWAT team had gone around to local businesses and schools and didn't want people to be afraid, say, you're going to see us in our full gear. We're coming so we can learn the layouts of these places. So if something like this happens, we're ready to go. That's the number one question I have, is why the Uvalde SWAT team was not there. By all the accounts we've heard so far in these press conferences, they were not a factor. If they were in that community, had the ballistics protection equipment and everything that they needed, and they had done drills and they had checked out these schools specifically for this, that's my number one question. I hope the governor will get the answer to, where was that SWAT team? Why did it have to be a Border Patrol team that showed up that ultimately, and they were even held off for a while, that had to force their way in?
You know, I may be wrong, Shannon, but my understanding is when one of the school teachers called her husband, who was at a barber shop, wasn't he a border guy? He borrowed a rifle. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even his. From the barber shop, went in himself and shot.
No, he got his daughter. He's got his wife and
his son out. His kids out. So why did he get in? And yet we've got 21 people, as I think. We've got 19 cops in the hallway from 1203 to 1250, Greg. 19 cops. Kids are bleeding out while that is happening.
Well, you know, I admit, you know, when I hear about a terrible tragedy, like for me, for the longest time, it was Flight 93. Mm-hmm. And you always run through your head. You don't have to do this, Joey, because you're in the military. You've been in these situations. But, like, you know, I'm in my head asking me, like, what would I do? What would I do at the Bataclan or at the Pulse nightclub if I was there? You think that you will react one way, but you don't know. I'd like to think I would do amazing things and I would charge in there and kill the killer and rescue people. But you don't know what happens to your brain, even if you're being trained for this. So, I mean, we're coming down pretty hard on law enforcement, and maybe they deserve it. But then again, we're not the experts here. So I would just urge people, like, we don't even know what's the difference. How do you know the difference between an active shooter situation and barricading situation as we're criticizing that?
Well,
how do they
know? I'm going to give you a hint. The bullets are still going.
But 911 calls are still coming in of people that you know are alive.
But, Greg, I hear you, and I don't like the Monday morning quarterback. This is what this guy's trained to do.
Right.
I mean, no one shows up at the Gutfeld show and say, I want to host this show. I think I can do it.
Well, a few people have done that.
There are three guys in the city who try to do it as well as you want on the West Coast, and they don't, because you do it well. You expect police officers. Now, we talked about a case where a guy got out of jail because he escaped with a prison guard, and he checked out because they didn't make him sign the note that morning about where they were going.
Right. Yeah.
You have one failure, and you have a cascading of things. We saw, Greg, I agree with you, but I got to tell you, if it's my kids, mm-hmm. I know we all can talk big. The only guy really here that's actually acted big is Joey here. But yep. If I saw something, I saw someone on a subway, I got to think if I saw a woman being raped like it was in Philadelphia, I'd throw myself in front of it. I do know this. If my kids are put in harm or put in danger, you can put a bullet in my head.
That's right.
A bullet, two guns, an AR-15. I don't care what it is.
I'm going in on this topic specifically.
I hear you, Greg. I hear, but I think in
Cops
that regard, not to, not to cut you off.
To go
I
in,
understand but, that. I am not trained as an expert rip them alive on the
news.
We're
not ripping them alive.
I'm just saying them. These guys here.
Go ahead, Joey.
Multiple types of law enforcement agencies were involved in this. All right. It is absolutely true. You have to identify an on-scene commander and let them have that authority. Otherwise, you have people
shoot. Have a command center. Exactly.
Exactly. So that much of it, I understand. I don't know what made them believe that it was safer for the kids in the room to stay outside the door, but I 100% believe they acted on that notion.
Okay.
But what about, one question?
That's the answer I want to know.
What about when the cop said, if you need help, yell help, and one of the kids said, when that kid yelled help, that kid got shot?
I have a question about that. I wondered if it was the killer himself pretending to be the cop. There's so much that we don't know, and unfortunately, these babies who survived this are the ones who are having to provide that information.
Do we know how many kids got out, Shannon?
I don't think we do. Listen, the school had more than 600 kids, so they were breaking out windows and taking kids out from other parts of the school, although that those officers... And I'm with you, Greg. Listen, my late father was a law enforcement officer, so the last thing I want to do is cast any aspersions. I'm just asking questions. That's it for now. And my father would have asked the same questions.
But look, but Governor Abbott, the police union building in my congressional district is named after my father. I'm a huge supporter of police officers across the country. The second part of this, Judge, to your point is... I understand you can have the wrong reaction with the right intentions at any given situation. But once the situation is over and you lie about it.
You're 100% right.
That to me is what makes some of this unforgivable.
A mistake does not negate integrity.
That's the problem.
Exactly. All right. Texas official Stephen McCraw getting emotional during the press conference earlier. Take a listen.
Yeah, thanks a lot. You know, forget how I'm doing. What about the parents? Those children. You know, forget about me. What about me or officers and stuff like that? We take an oath to uphold the law and protect people.
You know, I used to prosecute child abuse homicides. I never saw cops get emotional. Are more emotional than they would with these child abuse homicides. One of the things that this governor talked about, he was asked about the difference between background checks and mental health. And one of the things about mental health, and Greg and I, we agree on this, it's just this amorphous blob. We don't know what it means. You can lie on an application. You can say, you know, I don't have any mental health issues. I'm not on any psychotropic drugs. And under HIPAA, the courts, and I used to sign pistol permits, don't have the right to do a check on your mental health issues. Will we ever stop people who are mentally ill from getting guns?
Well, and that's something Charles Krauthammer talks about in this 2012 piece, too. When he was practicing psychiatry, said it was much easier then if you felt somebody really was a danger to themselves or to other people to get them into a facility and to do it very quickly without a full-fledged adjudication. And some of these facilities across the country have been closed. They're just not available. He said it was much different in the 70s than it was at the time he was writing this in 2012. The mayor also this morning talked about the fact that they desperately wanted mental health facilities there in Uvalde. They don't have them, like Joey was saying, that they have to go cities away. He said they had donated 7.5 acres for facility to be constructed there. They were excited the community was supporting it. And then they were told they had to raise $26 million. And he says our poor little community didn't have it, so they had to abandon the plans for the mental health facility.
Yeah, tough stuff. We're now hearing that, Joey, there was a digital footprint, more than we thought, that he was buying guns, he was in chat rooms. He had indicated in 10 more days something was going to happen. That, along with some of the other crumbs that we heard about, he was self-injuring himself, that he had violent rhetoric at the job that he had, that he was bullied because he had a lisp and he wore eyeliner. I mean, there were all these little crumbs. but nothing that really amounts to a point where police can actually intervene.
One of the biggest problems, this is an ATF form 4473. It's multiple pages. This is what you have to fill out. This is the background checks that certain people want to be universal. All right, you can fill that out, and it gets sent off to a government agency. It's only as good as the vetting of the government agency,
exactly.
Which is only as good as the reporting of the local agency, mm-hmm. whether that be school police officers, whether it be county sheriffs or city police. That form and that process is only as good as the judge that decides we're going to dismiss this because you're a minor, or the DA that says we're not going to prosecute this because this is going to ruin your life. We think you deserve a second chance. All of those things have to be on board before any other regulation on how we check people's background is effective. So we can broaden the gun transactions we add background checks to, but we still need to fix the background check, which goes all the way to what we've talked about for months, which is, should we prosecute criminals? Should we worry about their record if they've done a violent crime? Go study the Navy Yard. 4 violent incidents,
yep.
2 of them involving a gun. None of them made it to the point that they went on a record. So he went and not only did one of these and got a gun, but got a top secret security clearance.
Amazing. Yeah, 5 pages. Before I go to break, quickly.
This is why we may need a longer wait period, and we might need to put more people in charge of this to investigate these things and give judges like you the authority that you did not have years ago.
If you tell me that a wait period makes this more accurate, I'll be on board.
Well, you were unique. Everyone looked at it like you. We might not have this.
All right. We are following the breaking news out of Texas. Governor Greg Abbott says he is furious about police response to the school shooting. He's calling for a full investigation. Stay right here. More of the 5 is next.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
When it comes to the gas prices, we're going through an incredible transition that is taking place that, God willing, when it's over, we'll be stronger and the world will be stronger and less reliant on fossil fuels when this is over.
President Biden's incredible transition comment on surging gas prices may not be sitting well with the nearly 40 million Americans traveling for the Memorial Day weekend. The national average price of gas sitting at $4.59 a gallon. And a new poll finds 95% of Americans say inflation is a concern. Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm telling Americans the president is on top of it.
He's obsessed with the fact that gas prices are so high and people are hurting. And this is a global issue. So what can he do? So you can exhort the oil and gas industry to increase supply. I wish they would do it faster. So that you can bring those prices down. And it tells us that that's why you have to, at the same time, accelerate our movement to clean energy. You can walk and chew gum. You can do both.
Okay, so let's start there. Judge, you're a little bit fired up today, so let's channel some of that energy. The secretary says oil and gas, they got to start producing more. They all say we would like to. You guys have so regulated us that we can't do it. I don't know where the truth is.
Wait a minute. She's the same one who said, but that I had a magic wand. Remember that one?
I do.
Okay, here's the bottom line. They're celebrating the fact that gas is so high. They think everybody's going to buy an electric car. They don't realize that we can't afford electric cars. Senior citizens will never be able to afford an electric car. So they're crushing the middle class. And as far as they're concerned, it's nothing for them to worry about because they've got the deals that, you know, China's now going to make the batteries. They got the lithium from Afghanistan, and we're going to get crushed. That's all I have to say.
Well, I don't know where they think electricity comes from. Because
good point.
I mean, you got to think about that. Greg, way back in 2008, before President Obama became President
In my early 20s.
Exactly. Which may be a haze, so maybe you don't remember
this. Yeah, it's hard to remember.
It may be a little fuzzy for you there. But he said as a candidate that he said, yeah, you can build a coal-fired power plant if you want to, but my policies are going to make you go bankrupt. And remember, he also said electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket under my plans. So we should not be surprised. This is nothing new.
This is let them eat cake repositioned as some kind of altruistic sacrifice. You know, sure, you're going to lose your savings and you're not going to be able to go on vacations. But in this great transition, think of your contribution to this great leap forward. Of course, none of them participate in the sacrifice because they don't have to. And I love how Joe minimizes our gas pain. You know, what if we did that to him? And at his age, he has a lot of gas pain.
I was waiting.
And how stupid... How stupid do you have to be to believe you could cut a population off from a primary energy source without having a viable, consistent energy source? You can't say that about solar. You can't say that about windmills because they aren't consistent. None of us, by the way, I don't think any of us are against alternative energy, especially when it's nuclear. But this is nuts.
They're not down with that.
What?
They're not down with that.
The Democrats, they're starting to, they realize that nuclear is the only alternative energy that's going to work. And it took them 40 years of demeaning this industry and trying to close down, you know, all these facilities. I think now they're reopening the one in California. Gavin Newsom is reopening one. I mean, that's a sea change. Mm-hmm. Big deal. I credit Michael Schellenberger on that. He's the guy that's been pushing this.
He has. Okay, so Greg says let them eat cake. Well, that's
no, what, I no, said no, no. They said that.
They're saying that.
Are you even listening to me, Shannon?
I hang on your every syllable.
You're so evil.
Every day it is my life. But I'm not sure people can afford cake. That's the problem because, okay, here's a look at what it's going to be for your picnic this year or your cookout if you're having one this holiday weekend. Beef up 14.7%, hot dogs up 7%, pie. It doesn't say cake, but pie is up more than 13%. Beer is up 5%. Joey, it's going to be an expensive cookout this year.
It is going to be an expensive cookout. Number one, if I have cake, I will eat it, too. So I don't want to hear anything about that.
What's the point of having
that
cake?
That is the worst expression in the world. Not to just completely derail this, but I felt like after the last segment, we might need some derailing. listen. One thing I hate about this is not about how you get to the movie theater or even how you get to work. For millions of Americans, this is how you work. For people that drive a truck for a living, for people that own a lawn maintenance, right? Gas goes into everything on that trailer they're going to use on your lawn and make $20 today. This is not just about convenience. It is about livelihood. And when you sit there and you say, well, I really wish they would produce more, you ran on a campaign of bankrupting oil and gas, taking investment away from them, and now you pretend that's not a factor in this. I don't care how many leases they have. A lease is only as good as the oil underneath the ground. And when this administration took office, there was a run on land leases because for small oil companies, that's the only collateral you have to get investment. So you go out and lease 1,000 leases. If 10 of them produce oil, you're good. It's those leases that are your collateral to get Joe Billionaire to invest in you. And guess what? Joe Billionaire is not going to invest in you if there's not an atmosphere of return on investment. So that's a problem. But even beyond all that, you go back to nuclear, the cleanest energy that exists. Three Mile Island was a long time ago. As a matter of fact, that technology is not what we do anymore. We have micro reactors. We have residential reactors. We have plans for reactors to power a neighborhood. And you know who finally got the United States government to open up its material and facilities for people who have designed these? The Republicans did. Which I appreciate that. I'm not blaming Democrats. I'm just saying I know the person that helped write that piece of legislation and get it passed. That's what we need to speed up. That's what we need to make happen. One of the big actors here is the defense industry. Defense industry lobbies every day for nuclear technology to stay out of the civilian sector for security reasons. So you got to hit all the players that make this worse. Nuclear is the way to go. I fully support nuclear myself.
Well, you are nuclear.
I am.
In a very fast possible way.
I'm hoping to radiate my legs back. Is the point. Like, if I can get just enough gamma going, that's a little, and no, my like it, they grow back as little fins or something.
We're cheering for you in that respect. Okay, so in the meantime, while we wait for all these things, Harold, to come to fruition, J.P. Morgan is among those saying, brace yourself for $6 a gallon, national average, not just California. We're talking about Paducah, Kentucky, and everywhere else in between by the end of summer, by August. And we've got 56% of people in a Harvard-Harris poll this month say their financial situation is getting steadily worse, and that's the highest number that poll has ever measured.
Look, I don't disagree with any of the remedies that have been outlined at the table. I think Democrats and Republicans alike, Joy, probably share a lot of blame. When I was in Congress, Republicans were as afraid of Three Mile Island as Democrats were. There was resistance to the storage of nuclear. Now, I happen to think we have to build nuclear. We have to build batteries. We have to innovate. We have to drill. We have to frack. What the war has shown us is the vulnerability and how we are squeezed by a person whose country we thought was largely irrelevant in a global economic conversation. They have proven now to insert themselves in the conversation in a way that forces us all to reset how we think, not only about the moment, but the future. I think in terms of the moment, it was reported last week, and we talked on the show, that Chevron was in conversation with Venezuela. and there are Democrats and Republicans who were upset about that, who said, how could you dare do that? Now, if we are serious about trying to alleviate consumers and lower those prices from $6 to $5 to $4 to $3.50 to $2.50, then we're going to have to make some uncomfortable choices. If everyone wants to be holier than thou, then prices will go up to $6 in the immediate frame. Now, I'm not one. My orientation to politics is not to blame, because we can do that. And there are people who do it, and that's a fine job. I want to figure out how we get going at the moment and how we prepare, how we ensure that 5 years from now or even 2 years from now, we don't face this challenge. We're littered with mistakes from the past. I make mistakes. My colleagues make mistakes. But what do we do going forward? Nuclear, fracking, drilling, batteries, and innovating how to make cleaner products, including plastics, are part of that. But in the short term, we got to get our prices low, and we got to import from places they may not like.
Hopefully, 5 years from now, it does not involve going to crazy dictators to get gas from them.
I would agree.
Can I say one thing?
Well, you can, but they're going to scream in my ear.
But that's okay. They scream in my ear all the time. Do you know how big an electric battery is when you get rid of an electric car? I know somebody who was in cars. They say it's as big as the bottom of the car.
Yeah.
When you get rid of the car, what are we doing with those batteries? Okay, go.
Okay, thank you, Judge. Up next, climate change elites want to track everything you do, including what you eat and where you travel. That's next.
Some things have never changed. That's just the way it is. Oh, but don't you believe it?
Said my love is so strong, and my mind is unchanged.
Global elites at Davos being criticized for living large while telling the rest of the world how they should behave. Financial titans at the World Economic Forum boasting about the development of an individual carbon footprint tracker that would monitor just about everything you buy and do.
We're developing, through technology, an ability for consumers to measure their own carbon footprint. What does that mean? That's, where are they traveling? How are they traveling? What are they eating? What are they consuming on the platform? So, individual carbon footprint tracker. Stay tuned. We don't have it operational yet, but this is something that we're working on.
Of course you are.
And the world's elites, one more second, the world's elites are shelling out big bucks for some snacks. A hotel that meet at the conference gather it charges $50 for a burrito, and French fries cost $22. Judge Gutfeld?
Yes, I would like to quote Shannon Bream in agreement. I want to punch that man in the face. That is what she said. I told you she is evil, but in a good way. We don't need a carbon tracker. I have the best idea ever, a hypocrisy tracker. So every time you talk climate change on your way to being driven to your private jet, the hypocrisy tracker sends a moderate electric shock. That not just to you, but to your close friends and immediate family, so they know what a hypocrite you are. And if you're talking about gun control behind a wall of security provided by your company, then you get shocked. So I say, if somebody comes up with a hypocrisy tracker, I will invest, although I don't have that much money. But
Shannon?
I will join you. We'll have $5 each in.
Yes, so we're
in for
and we go punch people in the face, Shannon.
Well, I'll do that for free. Here's the thing. They're eating $50 burritos, right? They want us to get used to things like eating bugs. I think that's one of the things that we're supposed to get excited about. The wealthiest 10% of people, I'm sure many of them are in Davos, are responsible for 50% of all carbon emissions. So when he says, we're going to track how you travel, I want to ask these jokers how they all got there. Because I'm pretty sure that they didn't do rowboats across the ocean. I'm pretty sure they didn't even go first class commercial. There is a collection of private jets right now in Davos, and I think when they say to you, the plebes down here, we're going to tell you how to live your lives, use more deodorant because you need to turn off your air condition. I mean, it just falls on deaf ears. There's a Norwegian official there who said, yes, energy transition is going to create inflationary pressures and energy shortages, but the pain is worth it. They're not going to feel the pain.
Yep.
Joey, I'm going to let you clean it up, Judge.
Listen, the threshold to meet would be John Kerry's carbon footprint. If you stay below John Kerry's carbon footprint, no repercussions whatsoever. If you can aspire to pollute the world at the level that John Kerry does, then maybe you can be fined or tracked or bothered to reduce what you do. We live in one of the cleanest carbon countries out there that even cares about this. We take measures in local municipalities every single day. You want us to quit polluting and doing carbon, continue to progress to where the things we need to survive are cheaper to buy in a clean way. The free market can solve this problem. We don't need the World Economic Forum to solve this problem. And you know what is probably going to happen? We're going to devolve into lawlessness long before this problem catches up to us.
Judge?
You know, he just reminds me of someone in a circus, you know, like a ringmaster who says, just imagine you consumers can find out what your own carbon footprint is. I don't care and I don't want to know. What makes you think that that's a good thing for me? It's like they think we're stupid and we're like, oh, finally, I can find out what my carbon footprint is. When you say footprint, I think of shoes. That's the end of it. Okay.
The biggest emitter of carbon, two things, concrete and cows. It's an amazing thing. One more thing is
like
up next.
I like hamburgers. A programming note. Tune in on Monday for our Memorial Day fan mail special. It's a fun-filled show. Don't miss it. It's time now for one more thing. Greg, hit it.
We got a great show tonight. I know some of you might be driving, but I got Walter Kern, the great writer, Dagan McDowell, Cat Tim Tyrus. You're going to love this show. Now let's do this. You know, people often ask me, hey, what do other co-hosts, celebrity co-hosts, like the people in The Five do when they're not on the show? Well, they often watch the show. Check out Geraldo at home where is he? There he is, watching the show. His hair's all over the place. Lounging on the couch.
Cutie.
Yeah, he gets a little staticky after, you know, when in humid
precious
weather. But he's such a fan of the show that he watches it when he's not even on.
Look at that. Oh, he's adorable.
Love it.
Okay, it's my turn. Now, first of all, Father's Day is coming up soon, so if you want a cameo from me, go to cameo.com/.
Your cameo?
Yeah.
We don't pay you enough?
Yeah. No. So listen, okay, so inseparable shelter chihuahuas get married in an adorable ceremony. I'm talking, be quiet. Two chihuahuas found love in an unlikely place. Peanut, 9 years old, and Cashew, 3 years old, met at a Texas shelter and have been inseparable ever since. They decided to make it official with a marriage ceremony. They said their adieus at the San Antonio Humane Society. A small, intimate wedding was attended by staff volunteers and their closest pup pals. The pair first laid eyes on each other in the medical wing after they both had dental surgery.
Where are their nuts?
Joey, oh, hit it.
Peanut and
I do not have a cameo, by the way. No, this is my cameo.
Is cameo even around anymore?
One Tribe Foundation, formerly known as 22 Kill, is a military organization headed up by my buddy Jake Schick, also a combat amputee, a Marine that was better at raising money than combat, apparently, like me. Listen, they have partnered with Carry the Load. Carry the Load walks 20 miles and for 20 hours and 22 minutes to honor those that have fallen. Basically, they're restoring the meaning of Memorial Day by doing something on Memorial Day to remember people and show they care. 22 Kill is the team that One Tribe Foundation has as a part of Carry the Load. Go to either onetribefoundation.org or Carry the Load to join in virtually and help these guys and gals out.
All right, Harold.
I can't wait to see Top Gun this weekend.
Me too.
Go see it if you're a real American and watch a Ray Liotta movie. Rest in peace, my friend.
Shannon.
Okay, New York is full of characters. This guy spotted on the street. I love it. He's in Brooklyn. He is balancing a giant full trash can on his head while he's riding a bike. And he gets even more acrobatic. Look, he gets on here and he's got his leg kicked up in there. Listen, everybody needs a little entertainment. We need a little laugh right now. The characters of New York never disappoint, Judge.
All right. That's it for
us.
Yes,
they do.
We'll see you back here on Monday. Enjoy Memorial Day week.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Listen to The Five ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.